Hello, everyone, and welcome to the August 2020 edition of Ask the Amigos. I'm here with Amigo Aaron, not really, virtually, and we are going to answer all of your questions that you've asked on the Discord channel in the past month. So the first thing I have to do, of course, is to scroll all the way to the top. We have quite a few questions this week, Aaron. Okay. Number one. Which 70s or 80s band still sounds the most modern? Could it be The Cure, Aaron? What are your favorite... this is a three-part question. So okay. Which 70s or 80s band still sounds the most modern?
The most modern.
And this is Simulant asked this question, by the way.
Okay. Now, he said 70s or 80s?
True.
I mean, good Lord. So there's a 20-year span of which bands, I think...
Yeah. You know, I mean, which bands from that time period could you turn on the radio today and they wouldn't feel out of place?
Practically all of them, if truth be told. Listen, I would turn it on. I would love them. But, I mean, most of the sounds from the 70s and 80s just don't translate into today's radio, because radio really has changed quite a bit.
That's what I mean. So what...
Oh, I know. I'm trying to think of one. Do you have anything that comes out?
I do. I have one right off the bat.
All right.
Because I read these questions. I read some of these in advance, so I've had time to think.
Oh, I see.
I really think it's Pink Floyd. I think Pink Floyd, the way that they produce their records, they were really the first band that their records sound modern in the way that they're produced. Like, they don't sound lo-fi. Everything is very lush. Everything is very full. Like, when you listen to a Beatles record, you know that it's from the past, because you can hear the lack of recording technology. Pink Floyd really set the standard.
But I don't think they sound anything like today's modern radio is the problem. I love Pink Floyd, by the way. You know that. But I don't think they would. If I turned on a radio and heard Pink Floyd, I wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, they fit right in. I wouldn't buy it. They don't fit into me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go. To me, you almost have to go into like the new wave movement.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I'm going to go with like a more obscure band, but they were kind of some of the forefront of the electronica stuff. And I'm going to go with a band, something like maybe like an Information Society. They kind of melded in a lot of synth, a lot of, I guess they were not so new wavy that it was a joke, but they were not so popish that it was 80s crap. There was a pleasant middle. Now, he mentioned The Cure. The Cure never fit into any decade.
Yeah.
And I love The Cure. Don't get me wrong.
That would be one of the last bands that I would pick, to be honest with you.
They didn't sound like anybody.
But I do think that your suggestion about the new wave bands, because there are a lot of current bands now, like Muse and stuff, that have that new wave sound. So
right.
I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, and then I was thinking, you're going into a weird area here. The problem with the new wave stuff is if you get too deeply into it, where there's that heavy old synth sound, that wouldn't cut it today, because no one would buy it. So it has to be a more modern sampled sort of thing going on. So that's why I picked NSYNC. So NSYNC only had a few hits. Very few people probably had heard who Information Society is.
Well, did they have any hits that I would know?
Yeah, they did Pure Energy. They had samples from Star Trek in it. They had an album that if they had a track on it that was a BBS call. You could put it on you could put the album.
So they were a gimmick band is what you're saying.
Oh, no, they were a good band. Rich got me into them. You know, I will say, and there's some other bands that were real, like another band that comes to mind, a much harder band, but I could see them getting play. Would be like the lighter stuff from, say, like a Ministry or something. Real like almost like industrial bands. Mm-hmm. Stuff like Nine Inch Nails. That would work, too, because they would...
I mean, Nine Inch Nails, they were technically... I think their first album came out in like 89, so they squeaked by. They're firmly, in my mind, they're firmly in that modern category.
You can see where I'm going here. Like, I don't like Ministry, for example, but maybe some of the lighter industrial would work.
Sure.
But that industrial movement sort of came in the late 80s, the big movement, but it was around in the early 80s if you were
Well, I mean, that was the whole, you know, Depeche Mode started that with that Construction Time to Get album. That was the
first
record
Depeche Mode
to
be another band, but the problem with Depeche Mode is they do have a lot of that kind of old school synth in some of their songs, and that I don't think would translate well, but that's another one that was thought about. They
yeah, I think a song like Enjoy the Silence, you could put that out today.
Love that song. Love the video, too. Yeah. I like Depeche Mode. I mean, I don't like every song they ever did, but I think they've got a lot of good tunes.
Next part of Simulant's question is, what are some of your favorite all-time bands? We've answered this one before, but it never hurts to answer it again. So that's his next question.
Gosh, my all-time favorite bands. Well, listen, there are a lot of other people's favorite bands. Led Zeppelin, Meatloaf. I love ELO is one of my favorite bands to listen to. I like John Denver. I like Hank Jr., some of his anthem songs. When it comes to country, I like a lot of bluegrassy type stuff. So like
do you like the whole outlaw country as a genre, like
not
the Waylon
really.
Jennings and
not
all that
really.
Stuff?
No, not really. But my all-time favorite bands, I mean, listen, I grew up in the 70s, so a lot of like your classic rock bands from that era.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've got, like, I love, like, Lady Gaga and some of the more modern stuff. But, you know, just and Pink Floyd, you mentioned them. I always like their stuff. Eric Clapton, I always dig him. Stevie Ray Vaughan, Motorhead, I like a lot of their stuff. So, I mean, I'm kind of all over the map here, I guess. But what about you? Name some of your stuff. Oh, Beatles, I should mention them.
Yeah, I grew up listening to classic rock pretty much my whole life. And so now it's hard for me to say that any of those groups are my favorite groups because they've just been played to death.
Yeah.
You know, and so like a lot of those bands that you named, I like those bands too.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't call them amongst my favorites just because I can play those records in my mind perfectly. Yeah. What I mean?
They've almost been, listen, I delivered pizza for years and you could only hear Immigrant Song. or Freebird so many times. I mean, you know, I heard Freebird for the first time in like about 6 months the other day, and it was like great. I was like, man, this is a great song. But you know, after a while, it does wear on you. I will say that my current favorite band of all time, as I've mentioned to you previously, and I love them, enough of them. Yeah, Ninja Sex Party. I love those guys. They're awesome. So that's another band I really like.
Yeah.
We actually sort of similar tastes in music, don't we? I mean, you like a lot more jazz.
Yeah, I mean, I like a bunch of the stuff that you like, but I also like probably a lot of stuff that you wouldn't like as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, I know that. I've seen you play stuff on our shared account, and I'm like, what the heck is this crap? Japanese jazz.
Yeah, there's an Icelandic jazz group called Coop that do nothing but take samples, like little micro samples of all these other recordings and mix them all together. I really love Coop. There's a Norwegian singer that I like. His name's Jens Linkman. I saw him a couple years ago in Cincinnati. Love Jens Linkman. I like a Finnish band. I think that they're Finnish, called Kings of Convenience. They're like a Simon and Garfunkel type group. I like a lot of, and I guess I would call it independent artists. Jacob Collier is, I think he's the most talented musician, bar none, that's on right now. But in terms of like stuff that other people actually would know about, the Beach Boys are my all-time favorite band. I think that Brian Wilson is a genius. I've seen him two or three times live. He is vastly underrated in his musical abilities because he sings songs about cars and girls and stuff like that. But he's a musical genius.
I've never been a big fan of the Beach Boys, but I know that they're, listen, try to sing their stuff at Rock Band or play it. And I mean, it's layers upon layers, basically.
There's a reason why there's a billion Beatles cover bands and nobody's a Beach Boys cover band, because those songs are hard to do. The vocal parts are just so intricate.
You got
to
have a lot of Jack. Aspert Armchair.
Aaron, or Simulant's final question is, will Boat ever do a song from Black Sabbath's bluesy first album as a Patreon song? Unlikely. I would say unlikely. I've never heard anything.
I don't know what was on that album. Do you? I mean, I know I like Black Sabbath, but I mean, it's.
Well, he's not talking about Paranoid. Maybe they had an album before Paranoid. So I don't know. We'll have to follow it up later.
You know, just a sidebar on that. You know, I don't really know bands' albums that much anymore. There are some, like, albums that I know real, like Alanis Morissette, I like Jagged Little. There's some like special albums I know very well, but like overall, if you're like, man, what did you think of like ELO's third album? I don't know what was on that. I know their hits. I know some stuff I've heard on the side, but do you?
Right.
Do you memorize the discography?
I am totally different. You know, I'm obsessive about music, especially when I was in high school. I would buy, you know, this is back when you could go to yard sales and you get like a whole tub of LPs for 25 cents a piece. I'd roll in and I would buy every single one of them and I'd take them home and I'd listen to them. And so the bands that I really got into, like I can tell you every single Yes album in order, you know, like it's the stuff that I like, I really, really like. I think, you know, there's definitely a gap in my knowledge. And these days, you know, like I couldn't tell you any Lady Gaga songs, like except for her big hits or something like that.
Yeah.
But stuff from the 60s and 70s, absolutely. I am pretty well versed in that. Useless information. It's my currency.
I'm much like many things in my life. I am the I have just enough knowledge to be dangerous, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Frodo and L asks, which actor, male or female, did you have the biggest crush on either in your youth or in later years?
Gosh, I'm going to think about that one for a minute. You got a thought on this?
Absolutely. Yeah. When I was a kid in late middle school and early high school, I was completely in love with Claire Danes on My So-Called Life. I thought that she was the most perfect girl that could ever be created.
Mm. You know, I'm going to say when I was young, right, I'm probably going to say Linda Carter on Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And not because she was just super sexy, which she was. She had a cute little outfit, but she also came across as not an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
She did. She was hot, but she wasn't like Penthouse Pet of the Month hot. She actually looked like a refined lady. That was part of me. Maybe it's the thing, you know, you want a girl like your mom. She looked sort of wholesome in a super sexy way. So she was one of the early people I remember thinking, holy smokes, you know.
I've never had a thing for like quote unquote hot girls. Like, I mean, I can look at a girl and be like, wow, yeah, she's really hot. But the ones that I've really fallen for in terms of celebrities have always been the ones that are more sort of down to earth looking, but just, you know, like in some conceivable future, you know, we could get together.
Not
I'm still
me.
Waiting.
Hot
there.
Girls, love them.
Call me up. Let's see. Rushi asks, why does Aaron's audio sound so incredibly low when he's broadcasting from inside his secret computer lair versus when he's in his hillbilly arcade?
Well, the arcade's echoey, so that may have something to do with it. But the, I mean, I, we're on a perennial quest to have not bad audio. And so, I mean, I think I sound better now than probably when that question was asked. But that can change because I've sounded great before. I guess the correct answer is, I don't know, but I'm working on it.
Well, I can tell you that when you're broadcasting in your secret computer layer with me, I have control over OBS. And so for a long time, you were just low in the mix and, compared to me. And so we've made strides since this question was asked, which this question was asked, way back on, June 29th, about that. So.
Yeah, like Paul just chimed in. We actually fixed that audio. You must have been listening early on, Paul. About halfway through, Boat got it juiced it up, or not even that. It was pretty early on. So,
all right. Let's
see. Can you hear us now?
Paul, aka Hermsky, asks: as a child, what did you think would be awesome about being an adult, but isn't as awesome as you thought it would be?
It's, you know, I'm gonna make myself look like an idiot here, but I never really thought about being an adult, and so I never really looked that far ahead. So I never pondered. I guess having a car probably seemed a lot more awesome than it is, because you're like, shoot, I could get in my car and drive to see my buddies or whatever. You don't think about the other parts of having a car, like I've got to drive to work and I don't get to see anybody. And you surely didn't prophesize the corona coming out. So I'm going to say having a car hasn't been all as great as I thought it would be, because I thought I would have just unlimited freedom. I thought I'd be driving across country, you know, stuff like that. Idiot sort of thoughts of a teenager. What about you?
you know, this is another one that I've thought about, and I've got to say, I don't have an answer for this one. Pretty much everything that I thought would be awesome about being grown up has come to pass. Like, when you're an adult, you don't have to answer to anybody. You do what you want. I mean, within reason. So, like, if I want to stay up all night tonight, I can't, you know?
Yeah.
It's not a bright idea. It, when you have a car, I mean, of course, you know, you don't have unlimited freedom, but you've got a heck of a lot more freedom than you did when you were a kid and you were begging your mom to go take you over to your friend's house. If I want to go over and see anybody right now, if I want to get in my car and drive down to the Mexican border, I can't.
Yeah.
You know?
I just thought of something that supersedes my car. When I was a kid, I thought I would go to college and get a career and then have a lifelong job like my dad did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wouldn't, and so the job wouldn't even be part of the equation. Like that, the career was going to be.
It would just be a given.
That's
somehow.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it was quite startling because I was on the right path with IBM.
Mm-hmm.
And then really it was quite a wake up call or a slap in the face when they laid us all off and sent the whole kit and caboodle to the Philippines.
Right.
Because we all thought we would be working for IBM / Lexmark and retiring there, just like everyone that was already there who was doing, you know?
Right, right.
So I would
Did they give you any option at all at Lexmark to stay on?
Well, it's funny you should mention that because we were supposed to have not been laid off, but the guy that ran my little area, we were sort of a special complex repair area. The guy that ran it, when he categorized our what we do, he put us in the same category as the line workers instead of as the repair people, and so that's what caused us to get laid off. He basically miscategorized us.
Oh my gosh!
And then, ironically, probably not even a year later, I got a call from Lexmark to come back to work. We need you back. We're building. A new R&D, and we need experienced people, and you were one of the guys that ran the cell. So I said, I'll do it. I had quit my job here. I went down to get an apartment, and then right as I was getting ready to get the job, someone in their, I guess in their management was like, wait a minute, you can't hire him back. He took a severance. He's got to be off. He can't work here for 5 years.
Mm.
And so that happened 2 times, by the way. So I almost worked at IBM 2 more times. But, I mean, it's funny. Things work out. You know, I was really upset at the time, but things work
out. Yeah.
You know.
That's awful, man. Yeah. I'm sorry.
And what are you going to do?
Let's see. Here's the next question from Paul. He says, if there was a book of commandments for the modern world, what would some of the rules be?
How about take care of your neighbor? That's on my mind right now. You know, it's today's citywide yard sale day in Hurricane. I'm sure you've seen this.
Mm-hmm.
And all my neighbors around here and all the people in Hurricane are having these big yard sales, right? And I got in the car to take Luke to class, this morning, jiu-jitsu class. And he goes, Dad, what's all these people doing out here? And I said, it's citywide yard sale day. And he said, but what about the corona? None of these people are wearing masks. I was like, well, they decided to have citywide yards. So they goes, well, why didn't they cancel it? That sounds stupid. I didn't have an answer. I'm like, I don't know. So I guess that's the answer. If you're not thinking ahead and at least trying to make the slightest effort to help your neighbor, then what are we doing here? You know, I would say I'd put that in the book.
Okay. Yeah. I being a person of faith, I think that the original 10, as it were, are pretty darn good.
It's a good guideline, even if you're not religious, Boat.
Yeah, yeah. Paul also asks, in his third question, if you were given 1,000 acres of land that you didn't need to pay taxes on but couldn't sell, what would you do with it? That's a great question. You want me to read that one more time
for
you?
I got it. What would you do, Boat? You go first on this one.
I would probably use it to experiment with, and I'm not just being wishy-washy, like I've literally thought about this, experiment with ways of constructing homes that are cheaper and higher quality than what we have right now. So I would open up that land for anybody that has an idea for building like a model structure that you could replicate easily especially for people with low incomes, because you look at the low income housing around here and it's just garbage, you know,
it's like all low income except for the high income stuff.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, like, you know, Wendy Jill apartments on Main Street, or, you know, Sable Point, places like that. You know, how can you build a house for less than $100,000 and make it a good house and give somebody the American dream?
That's a very nice answer. I'm going to be a bigger jerk.
Okay.
Because I'm assuming 1,000 acres is probably just stuck out in the middle of nowhere. I'd fence 1,000 acres off. I'd pave a road right to the center of 1,000 acres. Mm-hmm. And I would put me a house there and I'd be done. I'd be the compound, like Art Bell.
Did he live on a compound like that?
He did. The Art Bell compound in Pahrump, I believe it was Pahrump, Nevada. Mm. He had his little fencing area. I like what you said, but the truth of the matter is the ability to make low income housing is here now. It's better than it's ever been, and it could have been done years ago. They don't make this stuff for a reason. Listen, not to get too political or technical, but just the society's all screwed up. We need to make some freaking changes, man.
You know, I agree.
They're laser printing little houses and stuff, you know? And if I'm watching stuff, if the Europeans can knock this crap out, what are we doing? You know, mm-hmm. Well, we're, you know, going yard selling. So yeah, very noble though, Boat. I liked what you said there.
Simulan asks, have you ever driven a Sinclair C5 or seen a Sinclair C5 being driven in real life?
No, I wouldn't fit in one, and I would probably destroy it if I got in it, but they are. I fell in love with these things. Like the second I saw a video, I was like, oh my God, that's great. But no, I think didn't your boy Neil do a bit where he was in one of these things?
Did he? I don't know. Maybe I missed that.
Did.
Okay.
I've seen several people in them, and they're neat. I don't think that car would work in America just because of the sheer size of America. We're all big, fat or tall, lumbering.
That, and we also like to drive incredibly large land yachts.
Yeah. Can you imagine, by the way, having that thing in West Virginia with all these mountains? It would not go well. No. You need that in a very flat area.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they look awesome.
Frodo NL asks, would you consider buying a Sinclair C5?
If I had the money, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, sure.
Just something I have. I put the kid in it. Let him go to work.
The problem with the Sinclair C5 is that it's not a covered vehicle. And we have what's known as weather here.
They made
in
a
West
little tarpy thing for it, though, as I recall. You could put it's like a little tent.
Not going to do much good when the derecho season happens.
Now, you could ride something like that in a parade or something. I mean, that would be quite an oddity.
You could have a new career, just a fat guy in a C5.
Yeah.
Just like, you know how they used to put the fat guys on the motorcycles? I remember seeing that every year in
cowboy hat.
No. Right. In the Guinness Book of World Records, they were always in there.
There was always those
two. Boy, what a record.
That dude with like a million cigarettes in his mouth.
Right.
You know, that guy was always in there too.
All right. Let's see here. Paul also asked, we got a lot of questions from Paul and Simulant. He says, Quantum Leap TV series, whose body would you like to leap into and what era?
It would have to be someone really physically different from me.
Really?
You know, so, yeah, because then I could do stuff that I can't normal. Because, I mean, I want to, if you're going to jump into somebody's body and you're going to gain all their physical prowess and stuff.
Would you like to jump into the body of Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
No. No. I would want to do something more like, listen, I harp on this guy, but I've always found him fascinating. Someone like a Houdini without the skill and physical attributes he had. Mm-hmm. You know, and the ability to know all the tricks he knows and all the card stuff and all the escapes, that would probably be pretty fun.
Ever since I found out how he died, whenever I meet a new person, I automatically clench my abs just in case.
I thought you were going to say you run up and punch them as hard as you can.
You know who I'd like to do? You know what I would do? Yeah. I would jump directly into the body of Donald J. Trump.
And then drive into a mountain.
And then And then I just start messing with people. I'd be like, I'd start acting normal and people wouldn't know how to react. I'd invite Joe Biden over for tea and crumpets.
That would
just imagine how much fun you could have if you were Donald J. Trump.
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, we don't get very political on this show. We're not going to do it now. But me and you, it's funny. We've sort of, it's in a weird way, we sort of are almost on the same page politically most of the time.
I would say that. Yeah.
And we both were as optimistic as you could be about this guy, given our obvious leanings, you know. But unfortunately, the virus has not done him any favors.
No.
But really, he's just he's the front man for a whole platoon of crappy politicians that are marching towards us all the time. So, you know, you pick your poison, Boat. That's the way I look at it.
Simulan asks, what's the most fun you've ever had on an Amiga?
That's a tough question, because I can think of three separate times that I've thought to myself, my God, this is it. Playing when I had just gotten one, and I couldn't believe mm-hmm. how awesome it was. After playing stuff on the Tandy, I couldn't believe how great this was. So that would be right at the top. Secondly, when I had that PAL 600, and I was just loading up stuff off the GoTek, I was really having a lot of fun there for the brief time that thing was functional. I had a real good time with that. And then thirdly, and I guess this sort of counts, is once I got everything rigged up on the Unamiga here, my baby, and just it all clicks. And for the first time in my life, I can play almost any Amiga thing without a huge hassle.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I want, Boat. It's just I don't want a hassle. And so that's glorious. So, I mean, if you count that, it's an FPGA. But aside from that, I think those are probably I'll tell you, the night Chad came over and he badmouthed the Amiga all day and asked me why I was so stupid to buy one. And then he sat up all night playing Hybris. That may have been the pinnacle of my plea, being happy with the Amiga. Because when I woke up and he said, I want to buy this. I was like, no, that was glorious. So that would be, what about you?
For me, they all have to do with social occasions. When I went to Amiga Ireland the first year, 2 years ago, and I was given such a warm welcome. And then I sat down and somebody handed me a beer and they were playing that game that you hated, but it was actually really fun. That PD game with the lines.
I know. Why,
and everybody was cheering, you know, that was great. That was glorious. Whenever we're messing around with the Amiga, you know, John will bring his Amiga to computer club and then he'll bring his gigantic network server and start typing in commands on it for no discernible purpose. I love when he does that. That brings me a lot of joy. And probably number three is when my uncle rolled up last Thanksgiving and he's like, I got something for you. And then he rolled in with the Amiga 1000.
Yeah.
That was the best. That was a crowning glory.
We got real lucky that couple months there. We're paying for it now. But yeah, we got real lucky.
Let's see. Simulan asks, have you ever had a time in your life when you've kind of felt a bit famous?
No, I don't think so. Famous? No. What about you? Maybe you told me when you walked into...
This is it, man. This is as famous as we're ever going to get. We're sitting here talking, and people are listening to what we're saying.
Oh, geez. No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, famous, though? I don't think so.
Famous means that people know your name and you don't know theirs.
Well, please. I can't remember theirs is more likely. I don't really think of... No, I don't count this as being famous, no.
That you're insane, then, because you're famous. You're a superstar in the Amiga world. Oh, nobody is hotter than Aaron Dowdy right now.
You can't be a smaller potato in any community. But, you know, we have a good time, and I do like the fact that we've got an awesome bunch of buddies that hang out with us. I will say it's nice to go to, like, different shows and Twitch channels and see people I know. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I wouldn't say famous, but I'd say well connected. How about that? I will accept that.
Okay. Yeah. It's funny when you're a teacher and you teach in the same community for many years as I have at Winfield. You are sort of famous because you're known as the band director.
Yeah.
And so people will approach you and tell you, you know, my kid was in your band and they loved it or stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you don't know who they are, and that makes you feel good. But, yeah, I think this show is definitely the peak of my fame. I can't imagine that we will ever crest the wave of fame greater than we are at this precise moment.
I think you've got a chance to become much more famous, Boat. But people like me are just happy to be part of the team. That's the way I look at it. And so I am not looking for any sort of...
You underestimate your power.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Underestimate. You're pretty much like, you're the main... I would call you the number one influencer in the Amiga community.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what nobody was talking
Ken
about
Mark
the Amiga.
And Steven Jones, all these guys, they don't got nothing on me. I'm going to influence the crap out of people. Give me a break, Boat.
Nobody was talking about the Unamiga until you rolled in and started talking about your experience with it. And then everybody got an Unamiga.
I was the number one influencer in the Amiga community, that'd be the end of the community. Because when that happens, just hang up, turn off the lights. Stupid. Roll on.
All right. Let's see. Barkbit asks, who's the most famous person you've met in real life? You've met a lot of celebrities, Aaron. I know you've met more than I have.
Well, I'm going to separate wrestlers from this, but I mean, I've met like Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's pretty huge.
Yeah.
The Rock. I met The Rock. Ric Flair. I met him. He's a pretty big deal, even outside of wrestling.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell.
Let me ask you a question. Of the people that you're mentioning right now, how many of them have you actually been like not in line with a ton of other people to meet, but actually, you know, talk to them by yourself?
Of these, none. They were all, I was all in line.
Okay, I was just curious.
I'm trying
like,
to
remember. It wasn't like you were like just chilling and like you were waiting, like you were just hanging out after like a wrestling show and Flair just happens to be hanging out there too, like at the bar. You always hear about like Flair at the bar and you roll up and he talks to him and stuff like that.
Do you know who Tom Savini is?
No.
He's a real super famous special effects guy. I met him just off on an off chance I was at a Comic Con or something. It was a Fright Fest, some kind of crap. But he was trying to get a place to set.
Mm-hmm.
I chatted with him for a few minutes. He was a nice guy.
So there you go. Yeah.
Use the urinal beside the Hills Have Eyes mutant guy. Does that count?
Ooh,
he was sort of
yes.
famous.
That is what you put on your tombstone.
There it is. I'm sure I'm missing. It seems like I've met some. I'm not a big like meet the famous guy. You know, I'm not.
You don't chase celebrities.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you do. They're just all wrestlers.
Oh, I really haven't done that for decades. I mean, if they're at like ASW or something, I'll meet them. But you know, they're not real celebrities. Like. Nationally or globally or whatever.
Some of the, I mean, yeah, it's all relative. Mm-hmm. I mean, celebrity is always
all
relative.
What about
you? When I was in high school, I went to see Jimmy Fallon do stand. No, it was when I was in college. I went to see Jimmy Fallon do stand up at OU. It mm-hmm. was when he was still on SNL, and he was just a guy, you know. And after the show, my roommate and I were just sort of hanging out outside the venue there. And there was a huge crowd of people because they figured he would come out and sign autographs or whatever. And they all went away. And my buddy Tom and I were just, you know, just hanging out. And we're like, well, let's just stay here for a while because it was a nice night. And so the crowd went away. And then like 10 minutes after the crowd went out, Jimmy Fallon just walks out. And so we're like, hey. And he's like, hey, guys, how's it going? And I'm sitting here talking to Jimmy Fallon. So we had like a real conversation with Jimmy Fallon. I got a Polaroid taken with him, too. And unfortunately, that Polaroid has been lost. When I moved to Korea, much like many of the things that I used to own were lost in the sands of time. But that is the most famous person I've actually sat down and had a chat with that was not in a con-like atmosphere. I met Joe Manchin and talked to him when he came to Winfield Middle School. He came to the band room checking out the band and stuff. I mean, he's definitely the most powerful person I've ever met before. But I'm much like you. There are very few celebrities that I would get weak in the knees from talking to.
Yeah.
And they're all musicians. Like if I could meet like McCartney, I would definitely go into the Chris Farley mode of just like, remember when you were in the Beatles? That was awesome. You know, like Prince, if I could talk to him, of course, you know, most of the guys are dead. That would be like,
I always wanted to meet Tim Curry. I've always been a big fan of Tim Curry. So he was
still, He's still alive,
yeah,
isn't
he's still
he?
Alive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Let's see. Duncan, the Dunk, asks, oh, now this is a great question for you, Aaron. Have you ever thrown somebody out of your home? Why?
Yes, absolutely. I can tell you who and when and why.
Okay.
When I lived in Lexington, I used to have a pirate cable box. I know you're stunned at this. And so we would come back. We would all get off work at Lexmark at 4 a.m. And we would come crowd into my house. And we would, everybody would get together. And we would watch wrestling that I had taped that earlier in the night off the pirate mm-hmm. box. This is when wrestling was a real big deal, right?
This is the Monday Night Wars,
and
right?
People
Nitro
also just
and
came
all
over
that.
Because that they wanted to hang out, and I always had a big crowd over at the pad.
That was back when you had your good house, right?
Well,
is that when you had your
house
in Lexington? No, I mean like when you had your arcade, you had like the arcade machines in your house.
No, this was before
that.
I was renting a house. Anyway, okay. The cable box had this problem where sometimes you would get these real thick lines to what you recorded. And that had happened on a pay-per-view. So our good buddy Leroy was there. And Leroy was trash. And he kept bugging me and hassling me and badgering me about the quality of this video. And finally, I tossed him. And I believe my words were, you've got a problem. Get your inebriated wino blankety blank blank out of here, you degenerate bum. And then I booted him.
Mm.
And we laugh about it now because we're still good buddies. But yeah, mm-hmm. he comes to mind. He did get the boot.
The closest I've ever come was at Amigathon. It came from the desert.
I knew you were gonna say that.
I was very irate at the Chud and John Marshall because they were talking about.
I thought you were talking about Hat Chad.
No. I was talking about the Chud and John Marshall because they were talking about Star Trek or something. It was something totally innocuous. But I was trying to concentrate on the game, and they were talking about something else, and it was making me very, very upset.
You get weird about that stuff. I like conversations about Star Trek, especially when you're playing a video game. That's the perfect accompaniment to a video game.
If I'm playing something like Galaga or something, cool, go for it. But if I'm playing something where there's text on the screen, I've got to read what's going on. Plus, it came from the desert, and I hate that game anyway.
Do you think the pressure of the Amigathon that year, combined with the fact that you'd been up for a bunch of hours and you were playing a game you didn't like, may have contributed to your angry outburst?
It might have contributed a small amount to that event. Absolutely. Chris Folds asks, "What has been your favorite summer vacation?"
You want to go first on this one?
I loved France. I thought France was great when we went in 2018. I loved spending a couple days in the countryside in that chateau. I loved our Airbnb right in the middle of Paris with the accordion players and the baguettes, just akimbo.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great vacation.
I would say probably we had a good time this week, but I would probably say when we went to I had a real good time in Charleston when we went down there, going to the island and stuff was rough. But I'd say probably our trip to Carolina Beach a couple years ago, that was a lot of fun. We smashed everything you can smash into a week, plus the beach, and it was fun. I'd never been there before, so I would probably say that was my favorite. I had some, when I was younger, you know, with me and my buddies would go out, but I don't know if I'd count this as a vacation per se. You know, I'd say with the family it'd be a vacation. So I would say the one to Carolina Beach. I had a good time down there. It's funny, the house we were in got flooded and then torn down just last year. Yeah. So,
wow. Graham, he's got three questions, Aaron.
The dub.
The Vebke. He says, have you ever needed or wanted to downsize your retro collection? And if so, why?
Do I need to? Yes. Yeah.
Have you ever needed to?
Perpetually, frankly. You know, I don't like to throw stuff out because and you hear a lot of people say that, but I mean, I'm always afraid I'm going to need something, and I almost mm-hmm. always do need that something. It's amazing how having all this crap sitting around, how much you need.
Right.
Listen, I've got over my shoulder here that I'm wiggling, my right shoulder. There are
I like
four
the way you wiggle
five
that shoulder.
Cloth bags. All right. And in these bags are, amongst other things, some classic Amiga 1000 hardware, right? SCSI interfaces and RAM expansions, some other crap, all right? Which it's great, but it's in a bag. I've got bags full of cards. I've got stacks of cartridges and stuff for systems I have multi-cards for. I've got cabling like you wouldn't believe. I've probably got 25 PlayStation joysticks sitting around here in, you know, various places, you know, and I could go on. None of this stuff needs to be here. And if I got rid of it, it wouldn't affect my overall enjoyment of the hobby for the most part. But where before, you know, I've sold stuff and regretted it. And so now I'm paranoid about selling stuff, which is not good, Boat. I don't have a big house, as you know, and so it's a perpetual issue as to where to put this stuff. But I'm working on it all the time. And I will eventually probably part with some of this stuff. Just like I parted with that Amiga 500, I finally sold that. I've got two Amiga 1084 monitors here. I don't know why. I don't use either one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll probably end up having to sell those eventually. Me and you have different philosophies on that sort of thing. Your philosophy, I think probably the best philosophy, the one somewhere in the middle. It's mm-hmm. where it'd be like, it's okay to sell some stuff, but don't go crazy. Whereas right. you like to, you'll get rid of everything like that. And I won't get rid of anything like that.
Yeah. I've only had to sell things once in my life. And that was when I moved to Korea. when I moved to Korea, I needed cash. I was broke.
Yeah.
And so I let most of my stuff go. The only things that I kept were my black box NES boxes. I sold the carts. And my Activision 2600 collection. Everything else went. My GameCube collection, my GBA stuff, all of that stuff went away. Now that I'm in a place where I have lots of room, Flack said on his one of his most recent podcasts that whatever house he moves into, he fills up the space.
Yeah.
And that is definitely true. Yep. Because since I've moved down here and we have the basement down here, I have filled up every nook and cranny with stuff. And so at some point, we're going to move out of this house. And when we do move out of this house, we will undoubtedly move to a smaller house. I don't think we'll ever live in a house this size again. And some stuff is going to have to go.
That's what I swoop in, Boat.
Yeah. Yeah. And so as it is now, I'm pretty happy with my collection. I don't have any great need to sell anything other than maybe the Plastic Fantastic. That bothers me that I bought that. That's my Socrates. That's my regret. But I don't regret selling my stuff when I moved to Korea. I had to do it, and I did it, and I had a great experience living overseas. So he also asks, Ram, he says, I believe the Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance are the best handhelds ever made. Do you agree with this, especially after using a Switch?
The Game Boy, which ones again?
The Color and the Advance.
The Color, no. Certainly not. And the early Advance, no. I demand a backlight.
Yeah.
I demand it. I'm going to look at this from the perspective that we don't have all these cheap Korean handhelds or this weird, wacky $200 unit. Listen, the GBA is pretty darn good. It's got software to beat the band. However, I would contend that the best ever would probably be the DS. That's a tremendous handheld. Battery life, the screen's there. It's got a great library. It was very cunning and unique, I thought. And along those lines, the 3DS, I know some people are kind of down on the 3D parts of that, but I always thought it was kind of slick, frankly.
Yeah.
Now, the boy's got a 2DS, you know, but I like the 3DS. I like the clamshell better than the GBA's gimmick. I think it's easier to protect it. I know some people don't like the hinges, but for me, I like the, you know, it is what it is. So I would probably say that if I had to pick one, it would probably be the two or the DS. And I'm not going to include the 3DS in there because that's I think the original DS is a winner. What about you?
I want to go with the DS Lite. The DS Lite has a much better backlight. It's got much better buttons. And it has GBA backwards compatibility.
Right. Yeah, that's a good one.
I used a DS Lite for probably 6 or 7 years exclusively as a portable, all the way up until I got the PSP. And it is a very, very good good functioning. And plus, it was the first GBA to have a chargeable battery, lithium ion battery. That was huge.
The Switch is a more than capable little unit, but my experience with the Switch is low. I mean, my kid's got his. He likes it. Mm-hmm. Really, if you want, I mean, nowadays, the thing he plays with the most is the phone. That trumps everything. He's got a 2DS, he's got a DS, mm-hmm. he's got a Switch, and he plays with the phone more than anything. So there you go.
And finally, Graham's third question is, Aaron, how is the Unamiga working out for you? Do you plan on getting any further FPGA gear?
The Unamiga is, it's changed my gaming permanently. I mean, and I say that with all due respect to authentic hardware, because you know I've got plenty. I don't have to bow to no man when it comes. I've got authentic hardware to beat the band. But as you know, I've never had any problem with FPGAs or emulation, not a bit. Because when you're, and you know this, but when you talk about selling all your stuff because you had no money, both of us have been up and down the road financially. And I've been there where you had to part with everything you got because you don't got no money. Or like I sold my first Amiga 1000 to get money for Christmas gifts. Mm-hmm. And I was flat broke. And so when you come from that background, you don't get a choice to what you, you don't have a belief system. You know, you just play whatever you can get hold of. So I don't have a problem with FPGA or emulation. And with that said, the Unamiga is, for me, it's the perfect Amiga. It plays all the stuff. It displays on my screen the way it's supposed to look. I've seen games I've never, ever seen correctly before because they were too big a hassle to load before. I don't have to worry about memory. I don't have to worry about AGA. I don't have to worry about processor speed. This thing runs about between 25 and 30 megahertz, plenty of speed. Everything is snappy. You can switch between all the different kickstarts. You can switch between all the different chipsets. And it comes right up to my game. Mm-hmm. And it also has good, nice monitor output and lets me have two joysticks plugged at the same time and has hard drive files and has a built-in floppy disk reader, image reader. It covers every base and fits nicely into my Amiga 500 case, which was probably destined to get sold and parted out. This thing mm-hmm. got a second life because of it, and it was cheap on top of everything else. So, yes. The Unamiga, an unqualified success, Boat. I love it. I love it. Except for being broken when I bought it.
That's going to do it for this edition of Ask the Amigos. We will see you in a couple weeks for August Part 2.
Adios.
We're not actually leaving. We're splitting this video up into two 45-minute chunks.
Okay. How did I do? Did I win or lose?
You won.
Oh, boy.
Delamort got mad at me. He said I was calling you a big fish in a small pond.
I think that's probably a little too generous. I'd say I'm a minnow in a small pond.
No.
Come on, Boat. The Amigos? We don't have any Jack.
How much Jack did we have before the Amigos?
Oh, we've got more than we did, but not... Right. I mean, I'm just saying, but I'm not having delusions of grandeur here.
Listen,
I mean,
man.
And also, you're the big dog. When you told me you went to Ireland and you got this warm... I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe the Irish knew who you were. I was stunned by that.
I couldn't believe it either. I was stunned by that. Okay, so here we go. Hello, everyone. Actually, no. We're going to stop this and we're going to start again because I'm going to stop this recording.